We're going to be speaking shortly, we hope, we expect, with Otis Richmond. I want to congratulate Professor Maryam Mirzakhani. I'm sorry if it took me a while. Mirzakhani, Maryam. Professor, first woman to win the Fields Medal of International Medal for Outstanding Discoveries in Mathematics. She was born in 1977 in Iran. She's an Iranian citizen. She got her bachelor's in math from Iran's Sharif University of Technology in 1999, her master's and PhD from Harvard in 2004. She is a full professor of mathematics at the age of 31, Stanford University. And she was congratulated by the president of Iran, saying, yes, the most competent should sit at the highest position and enjoy respect. And we respect her, and we're very glad she got that award. And by the way, they call that the Nobel Prize in Mathematics. I think that that's giving too much credit to the Nobel Prize. This is a far more scientific way of determining somebody's skills, talents, and importance. I think I probably misspoke here on Otis Richmond. I'm sure he's sitting at his phone waiting. I'm going to have to, we'll take a brief break, and I think we will be able to come back with Otis. This is Taylor Report, CIET 89.5 FM. Back, Taylor Report, CIET 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. Phil Condon is here, watching, concerned. But we're going to have Otis in just a moment as I managed him.
Phil, you know, there's a wonderful pictures on the internet of people going into Mike Brown's funeral, dressed very well, of course, as the community would, with their hands up. Everybody marching into church with their hands up.
Well, it's probably a good idea in that part of the world. Actually, we didn't get into that territory, but, you know, we have a gun-loving country, and there's a racial component that nobody – it is infrequently talked about. And that, I think, is the most worrying thing, because when they say, oh, we have the right to keep and bear guns, they mean to shoot black people. That's what they mean. And so that needs to be addressed, but by people who don't lose their minds, because you also have a highly violent culture. We are I think I've managed to botch this up one more time. I don't know how I did this, but let me see if I can Phil, if you could just you continue on with that thought, if you don't mind. I'm going to correct the phone number issue.
Okay, well, while the phone is being corrected, I would urge our listeners to go look at some of the images from the funeral today, which are very, very touching. And indeed, this the slogan of hands up, with the hands up, seems to be coming. It's taking on a life of its own. It's already popping up in music, and of course it's sarcastic. I mean, people saying hands up, they're not really saying that I want to walk around, you know, in a posture of surrender. They're just saying, what is it you want me to do so that you don't shoot me? And of course, there's nothing that I can do that will prevent you from shooting me if you decide to shoot me.
Well, you heard Gloria describe the situation of the man just going to work. He had a taser. Something. Again, I speak of professionalism. A policeman can't tell the difference. I mentioned this issue of hysteria, and that seems to be a lot of people suffer from it. We'll get into that later. We have Otis Richmond with us. Are you there, Otis?
Yes, sir. How are you doing today?
Not bad. I'm sorry. It took a little while to get to you. We were speaking to Gloria LaRiva about the situation in Ferguson, which seems appropriate to lead into discussion with you of Marcus Garvey, because Marcus Garvey had a lot of thoughts about whether America was able to resolve its issue on race. Tell us, first of all, how important is Marcus Garvey to you? And I know that August is a big month to remember Marcus Garvey, but talk about him a little bit.
Well, 2014 is the centenary of the founding of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League, UNIA. And Garvey started the organization in 1914. And the UNIA became the largest mass movement of African people in the history of the world, and the first branch was organized in Jamaica in 1914, and the second branch was put together in New York City in 1917,
mm-hmm.
and in Toronto, was moved to Toronto. Tony Martin, the great historian, pointed out that in Canada, it entrenched itself coast to coast from British Columbia to Nova Scotia. And, you know, Marcus Garvey had came to Toronto in 1919, 1928, 1936, 1937, and 1938. He had 35 branches in North America, you know, New York, mm-hmm. Like Toronto, Montreal. Mm-hmm. Everywhere in Canada, you had a chapter. And Dion Brand pointed that, you know, that the Black Toronto plunged themselves into organizing and no less vigorously than the men.
Mm-hmm.
And Garvey's 8th International Convention of the UNIA was held in Toronto from August 1st to August 17th, 1998. Mm-hmm. And a woman by the name of Henry of the Harry Tubman Institute, and she has documented this. She says that the first branch of the UNIA opened its doors in Nova Scotia,
mm-hmm.
and the Toronto 1919, and was visited by Garvey. You know, by the 1930s, there were branches in the Maritimes, one in Montreal, Quebec, 4 in Ontario, and 3 in Alberta, and 2 in British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this group was really never a tribal organization because it had always reflected a African internationalism or Pan-Africanism.
Yeah.
And there was a chapter of the UNIA. The headquarters was here in Toronto at the UNIA was a brother by the name of Donald Moore, who was born in Barbados in 1891, mm-hmm. and he passed away in 1994. And mm-hmm. He was given an award, many awards, but I remember I saw him at the Jerome Award. Mm-hmm. He's a unsung hero of the African community in Toronto. And he had an autobiography which was called Just Donald Moore. It came out in 1995, and this is a quote from his autobiography. He says, "Contact was made with the UNIA's headquarters in New York, and arrangements were made to establish a branch in Toronto. So our first open meeting was held in the office of A. Ben Thomas, a Jamaican, who was elected the first president of the Toronto chapter. William Otis, an American, was treasurer, and I became secretary." That's the direct quote from Mr. Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 1937, Garvey had a school of African philosophy. It was held for most of the month of September. Garvey put together 22 lessons. This was in London. He put these 22 lessons together in London, England, because he had been deported in the United States, of course, in the 20s, and
mm-hmm.
He back to Jamaica, and he ended up living in London, where he passed in 1914. But anyway, and he had these 22 lessons, and I think they were from the 24th to the 31st of the month. He was the purpose of this was to train a group of UNIA leaders on his work after his death, and that was this is there's a book by Tony Martin, which let me see if I have it right in front of me. Yeah, it's called "Message to the People: The Course of African Philosophy," edited by Tony Martin, and that's I picked it up at a different book list many years ago, and there were 22 lessons. And, like I said, they were supposed to these were the lessons that were supposed to be the leadership.
And, by the way, that was one of the gifts of Marcus Garvey, wasn't it? His ability to train people. He was very, very disciplined, very, very organized and a person, but he also knew how to communicate those skills to other people.
Well, I think his biggest contribution was the fact that he was a great orator because he was able to get his message across, but we should never forget that he had a newspaper, the Negro World, which was the biggest newspaper at that particular time, and I don't know if anybody surpassed its circulation. Muhammad Speaks was a great paper, the Black Panther was a great paper, but Garvey's paper went all around the world, and all Kenya, so on and so forth. He also had a daily newspaper for 3 years, and another thing that I don't know if anyone has done it since, but his paper was the daily, and then it was
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the people distributing his paper in Omaha, Nebraska, was the father of Malcolm X.
Oh, yeah. Omaha, Nebraska, as well as Lansing.
And Michigan. One of the readers of the paper in Georgia was a man who became Elijah Muhammad, right?
Yeah, Mr. Muhammad read the Muhammad Speaks, and Malcolm X's mother, she was with the newspaper to Malcolm and to Malcolm's family when Malcolm was a kid. She read the Muhammad Speaks, but the Negro World to all Garvey's publications to the children.
By the way, did you notice? You mentioned he was a great orator. And I agree. There are recordings of him available, including one which I know must be close to your heart. As he said, "I'll see you in the whirlwind." Which is your sign-off line, is my memory.
Yes.
But if listening to him, I hear a little bit of Martin Luther King in some of the phrasing and almost the cadence of his talk when King was on a roll, he often sounded, well, when I listen to Marcus Garvey, I hear a little Martin Luther King.
Well, it's interesting that Marcus Garvey, Martin King spent a lot of time in Jamaica. Marcus Garvey's body was taken from London, England to Kingston, Jamaica, his body was, Dr. King spoke when they brought the body back from London to Kingston, Jamaica. And like I said, he wrote all of these.
You know, there's a speech. They're always talking about Mr. King's speeches, but I'd love to see that one.
Oh yeah, it's he talks about. I don't know if he said that. If he said that in one of the last one of the things he said about Marcus Garvey was that Garvey. Let me see if I can find it. He had a quote about Marcus Garvey being the greatest organizer that black people had ever produced, and he said that here it is. First man on a mass scale to give millions of Negroes a sense of a dignity and destiny. He said that in Kingston, and he went to he wrote all of his books in Jamaica, and also Jamaica, I shouldn't say Jamaica, but Kingston and Atlanta are twin cities, have been for many, 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 many years. There's a link between Kingston, Jamaica, and Atlanta, Georgia.
Hmm. That's important to know. The name Garvey should be, well, it is actually, Pan-Africanism is quite alive, certainly the American and British power structures have kind of tried to marginalize, but you can't hide Marcus Garvey. He's, if you look at history, he keeps coming to the front.
Well, I can't believe it, but Marcus Garvey, one of the places where he was best organized was in the state in which I was born, Louisiana. There's a whole myth about, Garvey only being big in New York and only West Indians following him, and that is not necessarily true. Garvey was huge in South Africa, huge in Cuba, but African people in the South supported him. My great-grandfather and great-grandmother, who I knew, I had the chance to see them at least two times. They were born in Winnsboro. No, they were born in Mississippi, but they moved to Winnsboro, Louisiana. There was a branch of the Garvey movement in Winnsboro, and you know, Queen Mother Moore, Audrey Moore, she was in New Orleans when Garvey came, and you know, they confronted the police. They were armed, and they confronted the police, and Mark Garvey had to speak, and they basically backed the police off. That was in New Orleans.
That would take some doing.
Yes,
you would have to have an organization. By the way, I mean, if you talk about cities, he was very big in New York City, and he was very big in London, England.
And very, very big in Havana, Cuba. Yeah, and very big he wasn't that big in Kingston, Jamaica. But you know, the reason he wasn't that big in Kingston, Jamaica, because the it was colonial times, and the the British imperialists did everything they do to suppress that, you know.
Yeah.
Now, we had a seminar in Toronto, Canada, and on the centenary, we had a seminar on the show, and we had we featured Harry Gary.
Harry Gary,
the godfather of Toronto's black community. We also have Milton Blake was a speaker, Nana Caffelli, myself, and Jojo Chinto was the moderator. We also had a show. We had Aita Sadu was one of the featured artists. She, you know, she read her poetry. We had Carlton Harrison, Adrian Sheriff Miller, Jimmy Reed, and Wally Ritchie. And we had a group called the BMA All Stars. We put together a band, and we honored Marcus Garvey in 1919. For whatever it's worth, Marcus Garvey honeymooned in Toronto, Montreal, and maybe Ottawa, and he married, his first wife was Amy Ashwood Garvey, and his second wife, Amy Jacques Garvey, came along on the honeymoon. She was a secretary, and there was a big battle between Amy Jacques and Amy
Sounds
Ashwood.
Like somebody better write a novel here.
Yeah.
That side of him, I know there's a couple of major biographies of him, but his personal life and all that, his personal story is not well known. He was such a public figure and scored so many important firsts in the world I think we're only just beginning to mine the story of Marcus Garvey. Otis, we delayed getting to you today. I'm sorry. And we're sure glad we could talk to you about Marcus Garvey. Let's do that again in the future.
I appreciate that. No problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Norman Otis Richmond. Thank you. Bye-bye.